you're listening to the WGXC Afternoon Show. Right now in the background we're playing a track from George A. Romero's film Martin, which was composed by Donald Rubinstein. Donald Rubinstein is a composer, singer, songwriter, performer, and visual artist. And he made his musical debut at age 25, composing the score to Martin, which he's playing right now. Since then, he has scored numerous films, main title music for television series, recorded 25 CDs, and performed recorded with a wide variety of well-renowned jazz, classical, and country artists. Right now we have Donald on the line. Hello, Donald.
Hi.
Hello there. How's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
Good. We have Jack Ross, too, who's our co-host for the
Yes. Friday. Yes. Oh, that's a bit loud.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. So where are you calling from?
I'm actually at my friend Steve Gorin's place in Accord, New York, where I just flew in today from Los Angeles today, New Mexico and then Los Angeles, and Steve's going to join me in the concert tomorrow, so we're going to rehearse tonight and tomorrow in preparation for that.
Oh, great. So I guess, you know, I've kind of been talking about, because I've been freaking out because I love Tales from the Dark Side.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's one of my favorite movies. It used to give me nightmares, and I'd still watch it all the time. So I was really excited to see that you did the score for that and a bunch of other stuff. So if you want to just give us an overview on how you got started, because you started at a really early age.
25.
I did. Well, I actually got started on Martin. I was focused on composing, and I was doing some commission work for some people from the Boston Symphony, and combining that with my a folk song or a folk pop song career, because my work is very varied, and I always jump back and forth between the two. And at that point, my brother had met George Romero, who had previously made Night of the Living Dead and then a couple other films that were non-horror films, and they were in the process of trying to reconnect George with the world at large, and came up with Martin, which was a film that was made for $100,000, actually $200,000 in the end. So it was just a natural connection with my brother asking me if I wanted to score this film for next to nothing, and I was young and actually busy, and at first I wasn't sure that I did, but I remembered how much I liked Night of the Living Dead. And I thought that was a pretty funny film, but also a horrifying film, a combination of two. So I met George, so I said, well, you know, we should meet. And we met, and George and I just very much hit it off. We just had a sensibility that, a shared sensibility that really worked. And we immediately took to each other. And so that was the start of things. I scored Martin. I gave him some rough tracks for that. Which Steve Gorin also happened to play on at the time. We were all young and in Boston, and it all clicked, and I was quite surprised to see how people responded to the music after a long period of time. It started showing up places, and it's had a real life outside the film and along with the film for quite a while. So that's how that all began.
Right, and so I read somewhere that you started on with music, and you kind of tackle it from the perspective of a jazz man, and you work with a lot of jazz artists. Do you want to talk a little bit about your collaborations in that field?
Sure. Well, I guess my work, in the jazz field, I guess a lot of artists, Bill Frisell and I have recorded a number of records together. We used to play together a lot. We had a shared sensibility, of liking popular music, folk, rock, everything really. We both just loved everything, and that, along with the jazz, the improvisation, the more avant-garde sort of, and then I had this sort of artistic, visual artist, multimedia approach to things, so that was part of the mix. And so, I worked with Bill a lot. Bob Moses and I are now, many jazz aficionados probably know the drummer, are considering doing, we're planning on doing some duets together. And then Steve Gorn, who I'm playing with tomorrow, who's played with Jack DeJohnette and Paul Winter and Paul Simon. And we were all part of a milieu of people who I think were relating to a lot of different types of music, but who came out of a certain type of sophistication, born of jazz and classical music, but with a great affection and deep. Steve particularly is focused on Indian music.
Yeah.
He's a world-class, as many people know from the area, one of the great Indian musicians and from the West. He combines that with his jazz and other sensibilities. And so mine, likewise, just spread out a lot. And so, yeah, Bill comes to mind. Bob Moses does because of the current deal. Robin Holcomb and I collaborated on a number of things as well, other non-touch artists. And so my work really sort of, I jump around, but not wouldn't say the word jump, but I explore for periods of time very intently different approaches to expression.
Right, yeah. You're also a visual artist. Does your background in jazz fuel your art, do you think, or...?
Yeah, I think my background in my background, if that makes sense, is what fuels everything, which is just a great desire to make things.
Yeah.
And I just love everything. I don't really care so much about the medium and the material, even from the start. I knew that one has to, you know, your technique has to be good enough so you can get your point across. I mean, it's very important. But once you have that down, I don't mind grabbing from all kinds of places. So... yeah, I think they do relate to each other. I mean, a lot of people see connections between the jazz and the improvisation and my drawings and certain fluidness that occurs in both, I guess, improvisatory sense that connects them. But I think behind all that, to get it deeper, is just this desire to make things and not feeling constrained by having it be one medium or genre or another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, I always find it compelling to talk to you, visual artists who are also composers and work with like electronic machines. And I was reading, you know, just because, you know, like Brian Eno started out as a visual artist, and people like to say that like he paints with sound, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And I think it's a different sensibility and a different way to tackle the music, I think.
I think, you know, you're so right, and that's it's really astute of you to say. You explain it really well, and I think that's at the root of my approaches, because I think like a painter.
Yeah.
And I just will use sound a lot to, even when I do a lot of country-inflected, pop-inflected stuff, and even there I sometimes don't rely so much on musical mechanics to make it work. I think more like a painter.
Right.
You know, like I need a splotch of something here, but it comes out in sound in order to hang the thing together, you know. That's cool that you have that perception.
Well, yeah, it's funny that we're talking about painting, because when I was looking up your music earlier, it said that you there's an unused score that you did for Pollock?
For Pollock, yes. I did. Ed Harris hired me to score the film Pollock, and the score was not used. Correct. It was perhaps a little bit too avant-garde, but I don't think Ed felt it was right for the film. I think the film went in another direction when Ed first hired me.
Oh, right.
The intent was for it to be a little maybe wilder, and it got to be a little more of a narrative.
Yeah.
But so it didn't quite work, but I was a natural fit for it because of my affection for Pollock and my visual art, and then the I could relate to it all. But the score was released by Perseverance Records, and I heard not before Captain Beefheart passed away. I heard that he was listening to it quite a bit.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's a good indication that you had something good there.
Yeah, I think I did, but I think Ed had a point, too. I don't think it fit. You know, there are a lot of factors that go into film. Film is very complex, a lot of people, And so I wouldn't just, you know, say Ed was wrong at all. I'd say there are different perceptions, and, it's, you know, you're dealing with the production and trying to make it all. In fact, Ed went, and I went on and co-wrote a song for his last film.
Right, Appaloosa. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so, and we remained very close friends and creative patriots.
I find it very interesting, like, talking to, like, a film composer, because I always wonder, like, what is the process behind that? Do you just have to go in there? Do you see footage, or do you just get kind of a vague idea of what's happening and create something to go along with that, or?
It can happen both of those ways, and you can either work very specifically from footage, or you can, sometimes you have the luxury of staying away from the specifics of the film, because then that requires you to be very succinct in terms of timings. It makes, you know, and you get, there's more freedom, and you're just creating a sort of a palette that you think works for the film, and then maybe the filmmaker or the editor actually cuts the film to the music, which would give the composer a lot more leeway. And film, like many things, is, you know, it's like anything, man. You can approach it from any number of ways. Like, the creative mind can find all kinds of ways to make things work. And so music, film music can be applied after the fact. And, for instance, with Martin, I read the script, and George was such a great writer that the script was so vivid, and I felt so in tune with the character and George that I created almost all the themes before I ever saw any footage.
Wow.
And they all stuck. They were all, like, right on the money. So, but that was because the script gave me and then George followed through with a film that related to the script, so it worked. And then, you know, afterwards I wrote scenes that were, you know, wedded to the timing, to the film as it was, you know, finally made and completed. And
yeah, you did a few films with Romero. I remember watching, I guess it was another one of the Living Dead films. He did a few, in the 2000s, but I remember watching something where it was just kind of talking about how he runs kind of like an intense set, and he's very specific. So it's interesting to hear that you guys kind of have like this interesting free-form collaboration.
Yeah, I love talking to you, by the way, because I'm not complimenting you, you know, lightly. It's sort of really cool just that you get all that. Yeah, I think I have an unusual relationship with George because we click so strongly creatively. And George is very, if something doesn't click for him, he cuts it off.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you couldn't get the time of day from him. But with me, he gave me a lot of leeway because I think he felt I was on the path that worked for him. So I had a lot of creative leeway. But you're right about the fact that he will, you know, if he can't get what he wants, then he's out of there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why people really admire his work, because, I don't know, I'm a big fan too, just the way that he's able to blend social commentary within the horror genre.
Awesome,
I think,
right?
Yeah, it's awesome, and I think a lot of people have like attempted to mimic that and failed at it, basically.
Exactly.
But you know, it's really shocking. I mean, even thinking about like Night of the Living Dead, mm-hmm. if you think about it now, it's even more radical to think that that movie happened, especially with the ending, which I think created its own weird horror trope where the black man always dies at the end, which mm-hmm. is funny because it's the exact opposite of his intention.
Right.
But, like, now that's, like, a thing.
Yes. Yes. Because I think he follows a roadmap of his mind, you know. Then people try to figure it out. But he's unfolding a, you know, his own intricate and very personal responses to things, and then wedding that to his, you know, pretty formidable, very formidable film technique and ability as a director. So he's weaving all that together, but he does it all very, you know, very easily, even though it's a very difficult thing to do, because it's very true to him. That all makes sense, and so I think you get a very complex ending of things through him.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. So to back away from the film, I'm a little cinephile, and I love horror movies. It was like my favorite genre growing up. So this is exciting for me, especially.
That's okay. I was not a big horror fan. In fact, after I did Martin, I remember they wanted me to write liner notes. I was like, oh, man, I'm onto something else, you know.
Yeah.
And even George, he did Dawn of the Living Dead, then he tried to do two non-horror films, but they just didn't click.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I just saw the thing for, like, on your website for Knight Riders, actually played I'd Rather Be a Wanderer. I mean, and it was funny because I'd never heard of that movie before, but it seems pretty cool. And funny enough, I'm thinking about it, and I'm looking at the poster right now, and I'm like, oh, right, Ed Harris is in that movie.
That's right, and that's how it goes. That's where Ed and I met. We became on that film. We met on that film. We had our cars sort of. I remember him driving in my car, which didn't have any windows at the time, and he said to me that it kind of reminded him of his car.
Yeah.
And we got back to the hotel, and his car was even more out there than my car. But yeah, that's where Ed and I met.
So you're performing tomorrow night at the Hudson Opera House.
Correct.
And if you want to talk a little bit about what that performance is going to be like for our listeners here.
Sure. Well, I'm very excited. Right now, I'm glad you mentioned I'd Rather Be a Wanderer, which is a folk song, more or less, which I sing in the film Knight Riders. And my performances now combine the use of my folk songs or my folk rock songs, and then I extend them, I explore them, I deconstruct them using improvisation and sort of modern classical, modern jazz sensibilities. So you might hear a song like that, and in the middle of it I might take off and be into, you know, for lack of a better word, some avant-garde space, but a space that's about, that links the, you know, mellifluousness and melodiousness of tunes like that with other genres, which are more about rhythm or breaking up of time, if that makes sense. So I try and combine my composing and my improvisation. That's what I'm into lately. I'm very excited by it. I'm just so excited. I use my own tunes, which are like, again, folk pop tunes. I use them like jazz tunes in a way, as sort of palettes in which I can take off. And then I'm going to be incorporating, working with Steve Gorn, playing bamboo flute and clarinet. I'll be playing guitar and piano. And he has a whole different sensibility born of this very mellifluous, his Indian music, and he's a master musician, and his whole sensibility, and we're going to try and weave those two things together so we get, you know, you never know what I'm going to do. That's the thing. I'm up there and it's like the visual art thing. I might be in the middle of a song, I just might stop it and walk out of the room for a while. You know, you just never know. I'm just interested in space and time. I won't be gone too long, by the way, if I do that. I'll definitely come back. But I'm into using space, time with the song. So I've frankly, as an artist, just sort of developed over the years, and now I'm bringing it all together.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like it's a collection of your, basically, body of work.
It is, and experimenting with it and trying to link it all.
Yeah.
And trying to, like, use... Yeah, exactly.
Right, like deconstructing it to create something new, hopefully?
Yes, very much so. So I'm so excited by it, and I really am. So I'll be singing and playing, and then there'll be excursions, you know, and there's a simplicity to it, because it's just the two of us, and it's hopefully meant to convey something, because behind it, not hopefully, it is meant to convey, you're trying to reach out and say something deep. And like I described earlier, I am comfortable saying that with whatever is at hand. So I might be in the middle of a song, but then there might be some, just a rap or words that spill out. Time might stop. I might stand up. I might sit down. I might bang on the piano. Or I might just be very quiet for about 20 minutes, sing very quietly. You never quite know, but I'm trying to string everything together and really explore it more like a big painting. Is that making sense?
Oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense to me.
Cool.
And I think it kind of just goes full circle for what we've been talking about.
It does, yeah, cool.
So thank you so much for taking time out to be on the air with us. If you're listening, you can catch Donald Rubinstein tomorrow night at the Hudson Opera House. And it seems like it's going to be a very interesting show, and I'll try and make it out.
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to meet you. So
oh, great.
Terrific. Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to be a dork right now and end this interview with some music from Tales from the Dark Side.
Oh, great. Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thank you so much for calling in.
Okay, take
Bye.
Care. Bye-bye.